Okay, good morning, happy Friday, and happy end of the term. So this is the last lecture, although I will show up in this room on Monday in case there are questions. So I will have officers here on usual class time on Monday. Okay, and of course, feel free to email. If you have questions. Okay, so we've covered all the material. So what I was planning to do today was do a brief review of the material and then look at a few problems. But of course, if you have particular types of problems in which you have an interest, I'm happy to focus on those. So keep that in mind. Absent any immediate questions, let me begin then by just summarizing what we've covered so far, so in the whole course. So summary. Of 127B. So the main focus was a collection of spaces. And so the spaces that we ended up studying were the derivatives of functions. And I'll work on the interval 0, 1. Of course, we work on arbitrary intervals. Those were obtained by taking differentiable functions and differentiating. So that was much of the work. And we had ways of getting our hands on certain facts about these. So things like the mean value theorem told us something about what those functions could look like, or a Darboux's theorem. All right, so give facts about these. But the hard thing that we did, and we finally managed to do it using integrals, was to get that the continuous functions live between these two. So the continuous functions, it was early on in the course that we got that all differentiable functions had to be continuous. But much later, we finally figured out that, in fact, every continuous function is a derivative. Okay, so that was one of the triumphs of the integral. I was able to do that. And in setting up that integral, the other class of functions that we built were ones on which integration made sense. So those are the Riemann integrable functions on 0, 1. And those basically give us all the continuous functions that when we integrate, although there's a small restriction, which is that when we integrate, and this will now give us, if we want to get it exact, then the bijection is to functions that are both continuous and zero at zero. Okay, so that's almost all the functions, but not quite. And it's a handy to understand that. And it was just exactly that the only ambiguity with integrals was the integrating constant. What came up there? And then we kept going. So this then was contained in the continuously differentiable functions. Whose derivatives, of course, give you continuous functions. And then we could just keep going until we got to the infinitely differentiable functions, C infinity. And inside of that was a smaller class that were particularly nice, and those were the power series, C omega, the real analytic functions. There's another name for that. Okay, so those were a particularly nice function. We found some that were there. So the things you should have in mind are examples that live inside of each of these spaces, because those are going to be useful for producing counterexamples of things. Okay, so those were the spaces we studied. And once we had those, well, while we were building those spaces, and once we had them, we considered how to build functions. And the way that we built functions was either just kind of out of thin air, or more effectively by taking sequences. And so then we had notions of convergence of sequences. Of functions. And we basically had four types. And we did say that one of them could be generalized, but we basically studied four types of convergence. Of sequence of functions to a function. So we could have a convergence in L1 in C1 norm. So that was the most restrictive. That gave us the best facts. And if we had that, then we got convergence in the uniform norm. So that was the most common. That's the basic example. If we had convergence in the uniform norm, then that gave us a pointwise convergence. Okay, which is the most intuitive, but it turned out not to be as helpful in many cases as having a uniform convergence. And finally, most recently, we studied the situation where we have the L1 convergence, and that turned out also to be useful. Okay, so those were the four types of convergence that we looked at for sequences of functions. Okay, and for the three that are norms, we also had a notion of a Cauchy sequence. And Cauchiness. Okay, so that made sense for any of the norms. Okay, so those three things. The C1, the uniform, and the L1, the three norms that we studied. Okay. Okay, so those, and maybe I'll mention that sometimes, of course, the Cauchy sequences give you convergence, and that's the nicest possible case. Those are the Banach spaces, and we had some examples of that. So Banach spaces. So those are Cauchy implies a convergent. Okay, we had a list of examples of those. So I guess the largest class that we had were the bounded functions with the uniform norm. And a smaller class, so we could take the bounded functions that were also, so this came up in the homework, that were also derivatives with the same norm. But the main one that this comes from, the main example, is the continuous functions with the uniform norm. So that's smaller still, but it turns out to be kind of the one that we're trying to copy with these other examples. Okay, and we sort of did do that a little bit because we found that if we take the continuously differentiable functions, this very small but more useful class of functions, and use the C1 norm, then we still got a Banach space. Now, we also got something that wasn't quite a Banach space, but was sort of getting there. There's a non-linear space that we were sort of hoping would be close, and that was this continuous functions, but with the L1 norm. Okay, but we can still have Cauchy sequences that do not converge, and that's what we've been doing recently, is looking at a bunch of examples of that, specifically ones that give us some improper integrals. Okay, and so let me just as an aside here, let me just mention, we can fix that, and I'll just mention the answer, although we won't, this is an aside. So if we take L1, to be the set of all f in functions on 0, 1, such that we can converge to them pointwise Okay, and these fn's are L1 Cauchy. Okay, so remember that's the key here is this is L1 Cauchy. Okay, and those f's can be Riemann integrable or continuous, whichever we prefer. So let's say that they're continuous. Okay, so that gives us a nice space. But there's a trick here, and that's why we really aren't going to cover it in this, didn't end up covering it in this class, but it comes in the next course. And that is that we had this problem with zero. Some things had integral zero, even though they weren't the zero function. And so we fix that here with this tilde. We say that f is equivalent to g if with f and n and gn is above. The L1 norm integral of the absolute value of the difference between fn and gn goes to zero. Okay, so that's the definition. And in that case, we get that this L1, 0, 1 with this L1 norm is in fact is a Banach. Okay, so anyway, that's an aside. Just a fun fact of where all the work we've been doing is headed, but we didn't quite get there. Okay, so let's see. So those are the spaces we looked at. And of course, spaces are great, but if you don't have examples, it's hard to work with them. So the key is to have a bunch of examples that tell you facts about, that fit into these different spaces that converge in various ways. And we had a good family of examples. So let me just list some of those examples. And I'll just remind you of them, but what you should know or work out or be able to work out is, you know, I'm going to need a bunch of sequences and you want to know, well, in which of these four ways do they converge? Or if I have a bunch of functions, I want to know, well, are they differentiable? Are they continuous? That sort of thing. Okay, so so here's some examples. So let's see, 9.6. So this is f sub n of x is equal to x squared divided by the square root of x squared. Plus 1 over n, that's what makes it continuous. So that looks like this. And then it converges to this function, which is the absolute value of x. Okay. And so again, you should try to remember in what sense does that converge, right? Because we have these four different notions of convergence, and you ought to know which ways that it converges. And similarly, let me see, I'll give a bunch of other examples. So let's see. So also in chapter 9, we had 9.24, the Weierstrass function, and that was these partial sums, n equals 0 to capital N, say, of 2 to the minus n cosine of 3 to the n x. And this converged to this w of x, which is hard to draw because it was so jagged, right? It was continuous, but differentiable nowhere. Okay, let's see. Maybe I'll mention another one that we ended up with early on. So this 8.9 and 10, these are functions like x to the a sine of 1 over x. Okay, and so those are, I guess I should put them on the right because I'm putting my functions on the right and my sequences on the left. So this is a function, so this is a x to the a sine of 1 over x. And so knowing which of those are continuous and which of those are differentiable, that's useful, at least being able to figure it out. Okay, and let's see. So, and then in chapter 10, we had the very nicest functions. So 10.1, these are the power series, a n x to the n, right? And those were extremely nice functions, and examples were of ones that you should know. And they were nice because we could differentiate them infinitely often. So they ended up here in the continuously in the smooth functions, but they were even better. They were these analytic functions. And also we can not only just integrate and differentiate, we can also integrate. We can go backward, right? So those are good for both directions. Okay, and then the other functions that we had were things like sine x, cosine x. And the other example is 1 over 1 minus x is a good one to know because it behaves differently since it has a finite radius of convergence, unlike the others. the other two. Okay, and so that's the class. I guess some other examples were things that have trouble with integrability, and those are things like 11.15, the Dirichlet function. So this is the function that's one if x is rational and zero otherwise. And its close relative, the Tome function, which is not one, but one over n if x is rational, in particular if it's equal to a over n, and zero otherwise. Okay, so it looks a lot like the Dirichlet function, except that it gets smaller in different areas, and one of them was integrable, and the other one wasn't. Okay, so that's why they're a good one to differentiate between the fine point of whether something is integrable. And both of these had sequences that converged to them. So this is, say, fn, which is 0 or 1, but it's only 1 at finitely many spots, and 0 otherwise. And you can get that to converge to the Dirichlet function in some senses, some of these four sentences, and not others. So again, it's important to know in which senses you can get that to converge, which of these four senses. And that, I think there's a homework problem to that effect. And you can do the same sort of thing with the Tome function. Okay, let's see. So what other classes of examples were there? So then in chapter 12, there were some more examples. Actually, let me add one from, I guess, I'm not quite sure why it didn't occur until chapter 13, but it's a good example for fairly early on, 13.9.8. And that's, I'll just draw a sketch of this function. It becomes steeper and steeper. And it goes from, say, minus 1 to 1. 1 over n and minus 1 over n and 1 over n. Okay, so it gets steeper and steeper, and this converges then pointwise at least to this function. And again, the key is to keep track of in which senses that convergence is occurring. Okay, let's see. And then there were a few examples that were particularly convenient for integration, which is this L1 norm. And so those came in chapter 12. So those were, say, 12.22. And again, I'll just draw a sketch. So this is a function that's got a grid tall. And not very wide, but this area is always just 1. Okay, and so it goes up to n and down to 0. So it's got an area 1, but it's sliding and getting taller and thinner and disappearing. So this is converging to 0 in some senses and not in others. And once again, it's important to figure out in which senses that converges to the 0 function. Okay, and of course that area was chosen specifically so that it would behave in an interesting way with respect to this L1 norm. All right, and then let's see, I guess the last one that I wanted to mention, two more that I wanted to mention. So there's the one that 12.25. So this is a useful, it's just a 1 over x to the p. And for that one, the interesting thing, I guess that's again not a sequence, it's just a function, so I'll put it on the right. But the interesting thing to ask about this one is whether it's improperly integrable. And so it's good to know for which p's this is improperly integrable. Okay, and you should know for which p's it's improperly integrable in which intervals. It has two problems. It has a problem at infinity and a problem at 0. So those are the two that you can deal with. Okay, and let's see. So then I guess the last one is this. It comes in chapter 10, 10.33. This is a handy one. This is e to the minus, well, e to the 1 over x squared, squared minus 1. Oops, I should mess up a little more space because it's got two parts. It's that or zero. So it's that value if absolute value of x is less than 1 and zero otherwise. And the sketch of this thing, it's 0, 0, 0, and then it jumps up in a nice smooth way and then continues 0. So the key is that it's compactly supported. It's just supported here between a minus 1 and 1. And it's just got this finite height here, 1 to 0, but it's got all derivatives. So it's a so this is a real this is not real analytic, but it is smooth. So this is smooth, but not Google Analytics. And it has compact support. As such, it turns out to be an incredibly useful thing later on. It's just a very useful example to use for all sorts of things later on in analysis. Okay, so that's a good list of examples that one should sort of have at your fingertips to throw at problems. Okay, so I think that's just a brief summary of what we did. The other thing that I wanted to do today was just try some problems. And if you have types of problems that particularly interest you, let me know. Otherwise, I'll just do a few. Okay, so let's see. So let me start with one. So one of the things that we did, as I mentioned, was this mean value theorem. So let me start with a mean value theorem problem. Okay, so I want to show that the function f of x equals sine squared x 1 over x for x not equal to 0. And then, of course, I have to tell you what it is for 0. And a for x equal to 0. Is a derivative, let me write it this way, for exactly one value of A, is a derivative. So we have F living in this D0 from of R. Okay, let's see. So any thoughts about how to approach this? So there are two things to show, of course. I'm trying to show that there's exactly one. So I can first show that. So there are two things. I need to show that there's at most one and that there's at least one. So those are the two things I need to show. So let me do those separately. So first, let's try to show at most one such A. So by the way, this function should be familiar. It came up in one of the homework problems when we were trying to show that the derivative is d0 was not closed under composition under products. Okay, but anyway, so at most one. Any ideas how one might approach at most one? I call this function f sub a, so it's by the a there. So okay, so what if I had two of them? So most one. So if f sub a and f sub b were both derivatives. Okay, so we can go back to our properties of the space of derivatives. If I have a function and I take its derivative, if I take two functions and take their sum and take a derivative, the same as the sum of the derivatives. So it's the derivatives are linear, and so the set of derivatives is a linear space, and that's key. Then f a minus f b is in d0 of R, since d0 of R is a vector space, which we proved. Okay, but what is that function, fa minus fb? Well, I just changed the function at one point, right? Everything else stays the same. Only at that point zero are those two functions different, okay? So these are just going to cancel, right? They're the same. And this one, the only point, only at zero is a difference. So, but this is equal to the function that's zero if x is not zero, and a minus b if x is equal to zero, right? Because they just cancel it. Okay, but we worked out from Darboux's theorem that this one does not satisfy the intermediate value property, and so it is not a derivative, but which is not a derivative by this this Darboux theorem, which is related to the mean value theorem. Okay, so we know that there's at most one. All right, so what about at least one? Okay, well, let's see. So we can try to find something whose derivative looks like sine squared of 1 over x. Okay. All right. And so if we want to get sine squared out of something, well, if we take sine times cosine, that'll give us something close. And so let's just try it. So note that if I take sine of 1 over x, I'm leaving a little space at the beginning, cosine of 1 over x. If I were to take a derivative of this, what am I going to get? I'm going to get the sine squared 1 over x term. I'm going to cosine squared 1 over x term. But I'm going to get divided by minus 1 over x squared. So I'm going to stick in an x squared in front, and that'll fix that. Okay, so so if this is equal to a g of x, so let me just take that to my g of x. Then we have, oh, and sorry, for this to make sense, of course, I have to also tell you what the value is at zero. So let me take it to be zero. Oops. Didn't do quite enough space here. So so this is what, right, I just forgot to assign it a value at zero. Okay. All right, so then I can take the derivative. G prime of x. Okay, so this is some work. This is something we did before. And you can compute that this is a zero at zero. So this is a computation using using the definition. Okay, so if you recall, that's how you compute those things, is that you use the definition of the derivative. This is sandwiched under something that's got slope zero, and so you get the derivative to be zero that way. The rest you can compute using the rules. Okay, so you can use the product rule and the chain rule, and you'll get some derivative or other, and what you'll end up with is a 2x sine of 1 over x cosine 1 over x minus cosine squared 1 over x plus sine squared 1 over x. Okay, so we're pretty close to what we wanted here. So this is equal to a continuous function. Oh, and the other thing to notice is that note that if I add the cosine squared and the sine squared, I just get one. So one is equal to the function, which is cosine squared of x of 1 over x plus the sine squared of 1 over x and one if x is not equal to zero, if x is equal to zero. Right, so that's just the function one. It's one at every point. Okay, so then I can add a continuous function. So, the function 2x sine of 1 over x cosine of 1 over x and 0 is continuous. All Okay, so that's another computation that we did. So this is something we computed that the when it standards under a quadratic, then it's got a derivative that's zero, and when it's sandwiched under a linear term like this, then it's continuous at that point. So those are, again, a computation. So compute using the definition. Okay, so we've had to do two computations using definitions, and the rest we can use the rules. So this one we computed using the definition, this we computed using the definition, and the other two we used, and the rest we did using the rules. Okay, now we're almost done. So then, if I take a g prime of x and I subtract, let me give this a name, h of x, subtract h of x, okay, let's see, then what have I got? And then I add 1, okay, then I get just twice the function I want. Let me just divide it by 2. Then I get exactly the function that I want. So then I get sine of x, sine squared of 1 over x, and 0. Oh, sorry, not 0. So sine squared of 1 over x and something. So sine squared of 1 over x when x is not 0. And then I can just compute what I get when x is equal to 0. So let me do that. So it's going to be a half, right? Because I get 0 from the g. And 0 from the h, and I get a 1 from the 1, and then I divide it by t, so I get a half. So that works. And that's just equal to f sub a half. Of a half. Okay, and let's see. So, and the final thing I just have to argue is that this is a derivative, but h and 1 are both continuous functions and therefore derivatives. So f one half is also a derivative. Okay, so that made use of our final theorem there that continuous functions are derivatives, along with the definition of the derivative and the definition of continuous, and the fact that the derivatives form a linear space. So a bunch of stuff went together to show that, but that's what we got. Okay, any questions about that one? Okay, all right, so, and again, if there are no types of problems people are interested in, I'll just choose another one. Okay. All right, so, maybe I'll look at one that's related to what we just used in this past one, which is this continuity. So, yeah, so how about this one? So, show that if maybe I won't do all of this. I'll write the whole problem and just do part of it. Show that if f is bounded, then x times f is continuous. At zero. So that's exactly the computation that we had to do over here, right? Because we had x times something and that something was bounded. That was the key, is that this is bounded by one. So this is true in general. As long as we have a bounded function, then this is going to be continuous at zero. And similarly, b, x squared times f of x is differentiable. At zero. Okay. So again, we use this to build functions that were either differentiable everywhere or differentiable at zero, but not differentiable nearby. Anyway, it gave us a collection of interesting functions using this technique. Okay. And let's see. I guess one more part C. Find f some function on 0, minus 1, 1 with f multiplied by x, so x f of x, not continuous at 0. Okay, so all right, let's see. So which one looks easiest?
C.
Yep, I agree. So let's start with C. So C. So how would I build one? Any ideas how to do that? Or so?
Could you just use f of x as 1 over x squared and then mm-hmm. 1 over x, which isn't continuous?
Very good. Yep, that works just fine. So I can take f of x equals 1 over x squared, and I have to just ever so slightly careful because I have to define it at 0. So this is x not equal to 0, and let's say 5 when x is equal to 0. Doesn't really matter what it is. Okay, and so that's a perfectly good function. So x times f of x is equal to 1 over x if x is not equal to 0 and 0 if x is equal to 0. And that's not continuous at 0. Okay. Good. All right. And let's see. I don't have a preference. I think I'll do either A or B, get a very similar preference for which. All right, maybe I'll just do B just so that we get to or at least sketch B. So B sketch. So first of all, the picture, we have our function. And the idea is that we have this envelope, which is the x squared. And since our function is bounded, it's sandwiched between the bound here. So this will be x squared times the maximum size of my f. Okay, because it's got some bound, right? So it's as big as it gets. And this will be minus x squared times the norm of maximum value of f, the absolute value. And so what we know is that the function x squared times f lives somewhere in between here, right? Because that's the biggest and smallest it ever gets is this red boundary that sandwiches it between those two functions. And so that's going to give us that the derivative is what we want. Okay, and so how are we going to see now the derivative? Just continue with the sketch. So with the derivative, we're going to take the value here at 0, right, which will be 0. And then we're going to look at some other value on this function. And we want to say that that slope is going to 0. Well, the biggest that slope could be is if the function value were up here. Okay, and the smallest it could be is if the function were down there. So I just have to show that those two are going to 0, and I'll be done. So that's the sketch. And then I can just write it out. Okay. All right, so since f is bounded, now we have 0, 1, sorry, minus 1, 1 is where we are. We have this supernorm is, of course, finite. Right, because it needs to be bounded. Okay, and so, and of course, just remind you, of course, that's the soup over x in the domain, minus 1, 1, of f the value of f of x, just the definition, right? And so that tells us that this function we are interested in, x squared, f of x, lives between m times x squared and minus m times x squared. So in absolute value, it's less than or equal to x squared times this constant m. Okay, and so then we can write down the derivative, the definition of the derivative. So x squared f of x prime at zero, right, is equal to, just by definition, that's the limit as h goes to zero of the function. So h squared f of h minus the value of that function at zero, which is zero, because it's a zero times something less than m, okay, so that's going to be zero, divided by h. And this is a sandwich, so we can use our sandwich theorem. So this, by the way, is equal, therefore, to the limit as h goes to zero of h times f of h. Right, when we just cancel the h's and the zero goes to zero, which is sandwiched by maximum and minimum values m and minus m. So by sandwich, f prime, this function here, x squared f of x prime at zero, is less than or equal to the limit as h goes to zero of h times m, and bigger than or equal to minus that. And of course, these are both zero. So we have it stands between zero and zero, and we're done. So so that's it. And A is simple. Right, so in that case, the picture is this one. And again, we get that our function lives in between here somewhere, bouncing back and forth, but it's stuck between these this anvil. And so it's forced to go to zero. Okay, any questions about that example? So again, it's a handy way to build functions that have interesting properties, but you can still control certain things about them. It allows you to control the derivative of the second continuity. And you can use a similar trick to control higher derivatives if you wanted to, but still have bizarre and complicated behavior happening inside there. Okay. Questions about that. All right, and so if there are no topics of interest particular, then I'll do one more. So a few more minutes. So so those are both from back at the beginning, the derivatives. So now let's see. Let me try one that's a little bit more recent. Let's try to build an L1 Cauchy sequence of differentiable functions that converge pointwise to the Dirichlet function. So problem, find an L1 Cauchy sequence of differentiable functions which converge pointwise to the Dirichlet function. Which I wrote down a minute ago, but I'll write it again. It's one or zero. Depending on whether x is rational or not. And let me just work in the interval from a 0 to 1. Okay, so that's what we're trying to do. Trying to build this O1 Fisher sequence of differentiable functions. Okay, well, let's see. So if I were to drop the differentiability condition, then does anyone see how I might go about this? Then it's closer to one of the homework problems. If I forget about differentiable and just try to get started that way, then how would I build a sequence of functions that converges pointwise to this Dirichlet function?
I'm thinking, I don't have an exact answer, but I'm thinking you would have to enumerate the rationals, right? And then set them as one. But I just forgot how we did that in the homework.
But that's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's exactly the idea. So let's do that. So and you'll need to do that for both, for the, once you start assuming it's differentiable as well. So as you say, so enumerate the rationals. So let me call them Q for rational. So Q1, Q2 is all rationals in 0, 1. Okay. And if I didn't ask that it be differentiable, then I could write some function. Let me say F sub n to be 1 if x is equal to Qn and 0 otherwise. Okay, and then I can just add them up. Okay, so I can take capital F sub n will be the sum from r equals 1 to n of little f sub n. Okay, so this is going to be something that's a function that's 1 at these n rational points and 0 everywhere else. Okay, so that's going to converge pointwise. So then Fn converges as n goes to infinity to the Dirichlet function pointwise. And what does it do in L1? So what does it mean for that? Is this an L1 Cauchy sequence? Let's do them one at a time. What's the L1 norm of these Fn? So just remember the definition. L1. So that's the integral, right, of this function. Yeah, exactly. It's 0, right? So does everyone see that? So it's 0 because it's just non-zero at one at a finite list of points. Yeah. Okay. So a couple of people got that. That's right. So so this is going to be the integral from I guess it's 0 to 1 of f sub n of x dx. And this is just going to be 0. And the same thing, of course, for the capital F, because there are only finitely many places where it's not 0. So capital F sub n also has a L1 norm, which is 0. All right, so does that make it a Cauchy sequence? Well, to check that it's Cauchy, I had to check the differences, but that's also true, right? So the norm of capital Fn minus capital Fm is also just non-zero at a finite list of points. So again, that's just 0. So it's Cauchy. Right, because what we need is that that's for all epsilon there exists m, for all n and m bigger than n, we have that the norm of the difference is less than epsilon, but it's always 0. So it's always less than epsilon. Okay, so that's an easy check. Okay, so the last thing to do, I'm about out of time, but I want to replace these little f's with something else. Okay, and so maybe if I might do that. Well, I am at time. So let me just give a hint. So consider g sub n to be with support in just a small interval around 1 over n. So support in g sub n comma k. So I'm going to have pairs here with support in the interval from q sub n minus 1 over k and q sub n plus 1 over k. Okay, so the picture here, I have q sub n here, and my g is just going to be this little tiny thing that lives right over q sub n, okay, and is supported in the interval that I mentioned there, so plus or minus 1 over k. G sub n, g n of q n is just equal to 1, just like I have here. Okay, so then I claim that, so then consider, and let's say that's also equal to the maximum. So let's write it. Okay, so it doesn't get any bigger than 1, just like in my drawing. Okay, all right, then take g sub n. So again, we're going to take a sum. N equals 1 to this capital N of g sub n. And I just have to make sure that my k is small enough that I have a small integral. Okay, so something like 1 over n cubed will work. That's right, n cubed, sorry. I have my 1 over. And then check the L1 Cauchy condition again. Okay, I'm out of time, but I hope at least the basic idea is clear, and I'm hoping to work out. Anyway, I will turn off the recording, and I guess the class is over. I will.